thumbnail, Billy Ray watched her. After a few minutes, he knew she was perfect, and he started towards her, his eyes on the concrete, carefully picking his steps, drawn not by lust but by boredom. He wanted to talk to someone, and she had ears. "Excuse me, do you know what time it is?" Her eyes, a diffident hazel that ran chartreuse around the pupil, peeled wide when she saw the bleared face standing before her. Inside the bar, she looked older, but at this distance, her youth was pronounced. Not a single line creased her face. Her skin was unblemished talc. Twin dimples framed her mouth when she smiled, which she did after the initial shock of him lifted. She glanced back at her phone.
"Just past midnight."
"And what time is last call?" Her breath was lime and tequila and smoke.
1:30 usually. 1:40 if Cam's in a good mood.
"Damn, that's early."
"Welcome to Denver."
"I thought it'd be later."
"This city dies at 2 a.m.
She dropped her cigarette and stomped it with her Doc Martin and pulled another from the pack. "Here." He flashed his lighter and cupped the flame for her.
"A gentleman appears."
"Is that one of those spirits?" She nodded. "Them's those healthy cigarettes, right?" She tilted her chin down and pursed her lips into a perfect bow through which she pushed a thin stream of smoke.
"That's what my doctor told me."
"My doctor had a stroke. He lost his whole left side."
"Oh, no."
"He's all right now."
"I've got to remember that one."
"Has an oldie."
"What do you do with a sick pig?"
"I do not know."
"Put him in a hambulance."
"That's pretty good. You should be a comedian." She sat on the edge of a wooden table and crossed her ankles.
"I'm fucked up, but I'm not that fucked up."
He nodded at her boots. "Those are some real shit kickers."
"I kick a lot of shit."
She stuck out her hand.
"Erica."
Perplexed, he took her hand and shook. "That's some shake you got there, Miss Erica."
"Your turn."
"My turn?"
"What's your name?"
"Oh, Billy Ray. Billy Ray Schaefer."
"You must be from the South."
"I grew up here, but I've been gone is all."
"It's rare you meet a native."
"Where are you from?"
"Here."
"So then you're rare, too."
"We're just a couple of fucking unicorns."
"I'd say you're more of a dragon."
"Why's that?"
"'Cause unicorns aren't scary." She looked up at him.
"I'm scary?"
"Terrifying."
"I'll take that as a compliment."
"That's how I meant it."
"Well, thanks. I like your sideburns."
"Thank you kindly."
"What are you doing out here?"
"Smoking."
"I mean in Denver."
Visiting family."
"And how are you liking it?"
Billy Ray focused his limited faculties on preventing his words from slurring. "I'm shit-faced and talking to a pretty girl. I've had worse luck." Erica touched her fingers to her collarbone and batted her eyelashes in mock flattery.
"You sweet talker, you."
"I saw you. I was over there and I saw you and I just thought you looked so nice, so I came over."
"Yeah, I was just kind of zoned out on my phone, as always."
"I do not have a phone."
"You don't?"
"Yeah, I mean, no."
"How do you talk to people?"
"I don't, really." Billy Ray looked around for his beer until he remembered he didn't have one. "Looks like I need a drink."
"You better get one."
"Can I buy you a drink?"
"I have a boyfriend."
"Can I buy him a drink?"
He's not here."
"Well, tell him that I offered."
"I will."
"It was nice talking to you, Miss Erica."
"Yeah, you too."
And with that, he used up all that he had left. He fought to the bar and ordered another Boilermaker. He pushed his fists into his forehead. "I don't have it anymore." The conversation emphasized his incongruity. This place wasn't for him, and very few places were. If the doorman had any empathy, he wouldn't have let him in. A dragon? Fuck me, he thought. He leaned on the hardwood, a man far beyond tired, exhausted, depleted, all dried up. He felt miserable and bitter, flammable, a pile of straw looking for a spark before it blew away. He looked around. Everything about the bar was a razor to his nerves. The music, the tough guy chic, the shit on the walls, even the way the bartender poured. Too precise, inhuman. The previous bartender was generous, but this one, yet another kid, brown hair, messy, his boyish face still handsome beneath a padding of beer bloat. He poured like an accountant.
$5.
That's all they knew how to say. Billy Ray gave him a 10 and waved off his change. He leaned in and tapped his nostril with his index finger. Do you think you could help me out? Beneath bent brows, the bartender's eyes iced over. Billy Ray popped the whiskey, trying to appear casual instead of desperate. The bartender's gaze stiffened. The moment dragged until a bartender's arm shot out and snatched away Billy Ray's beer.
You gotta go, bud.
Billy Ray was too tired for jokes. I paid for that. The bartender pushed the tenner back to him.
Out, now.
He pointed towards the door.
Spencer.
The doorman rose off his stool. The bartender raised his chin at Billy Ray.
He's gotta go.
What did I do? Billy Ray demanded, his eyes incredulous, his face pleading, can you believe this? The surrounding onlookers, heeding the barkeep's call, offered no sympathy. Instead, they signaled their allegiance, raising their chins and squaring their shoulders, hardening themselves in a cabaret of manhood.
Can't come in here and ask the staff for drugs,
the bartender said. The circle of young bodies tightened, and Billy Ray found himself chest to chest with a smirking, bleach-haired face. The youth's eyes glinted with meanness.
Want to dance?
The face said. I don't have the time to teach you.
Come on,
the doorman said, working his body between Billy Ray and the wall of patrons. He took the big man by the wrist and tugged him towards the door.
Let's go, old-timer.
Billy Ray stopped dead. I'll leave, but I'm not going to hold your hand. The doorman faltered, unable to match the big man's intensity. He let go, and Billy Ray marched, brushing the shoulder of the boy who offered to dance. The bleach-head boy raised his hand an inch from Billy Ray's face and waved,
Later, faggot!
The room turned every shade of red. The day's failures calcified. Sharp, jagged shards rupturing his long, ballooning rage. His son, Wendy, the girl outside. Billy Ray raised his boot and stomped down hard, crushing the instep of the bleach boy's Vans. The boy howled. Billy Ray spat in his face.
Not cool,
said the doorman, leaning his shoulder into the big man to push him from behind. Billy Ray spun sideways and the doorman toppled forward. As he stumbled, Billy Ray shoved him, sending him face first into the wall. He turned and snatched the hem of the bleached kid's t-shirt, yanked it up over his face, and pistoned a jab into his ribcage before tossing him sprawling to the floor. He kicked him in the stomach, spat on him again. One of the bartenders said he was calling the cops. Two hard-looking boys in matching denim vests started towards him, but Billy Ray found an empty High Life and broke the bottom of the bottle against the edge of the table. The pair of vests froze as Billy Ray slashed the space in front of him with a jagged bottleneck, his eyes burning, collapsing stars. Who's tough? He said. Who wants to stay young forever? He backed towards the door, holding the shard in front of him, barking aspersions, hoping to be tested, aching to spread skin, but nobody moved against his madness. As he butted open the front door, the last thing he said before he started running was, All I wanted was a taste. The night was still. Sounds failed to echo. Through it, he moved like a cloud, totally mindless and roving, his legs churning ungoverned. No one followed, but still he ran. All he knew was that he had to get away. On Welton, a train passed, a blur of chimes and lights. He went north, following the train, pounding the vacant sidewalk, panting, the slap of his boots reporting off the pavement. When he stopped, bent over and heaving at the light on 30th, his throat stung with bile. Dizzy, his vision contracted with his pulse. He was still holding the shattered bottleneck. He tossed the weapon into a bush, found a bench, and collapsed. His heart was pneumatic. He figured he might die. Artificially bright and choked of stars, the sky filled his vision, but he stared without seeing as his chest rose and fell, alive despite himself, thoughtless, detached. He turned his head, vomited, laid back down. Another train passed. To the passengers, he looked dead. He remained like that until the nausea passed. He thought of water, drifting. His legs hurt. "You really done it this time, feller." He was almost asleep when he heard the whistling. From down the block across the street, seven notes repeated, growing louder on every recurrence. Billy Ray recognized the melody, sang along in his head.
"Celebrate good times, come on."
The tunesmith wore a duster, black leather and too long for his stocky body, a sausage in excess casing. He walked funny to avoid stepping on the tail of his coat, kicking his feet out in a prancing goose step, his knees unbending, moving his legs like a pair of scissors.
"Celebrate good times. Come on, Billy Ray. Come on."
Billy Ray sat up to see him better. The man stopped and cocked his head.
"You a vampire?"
the man said. He stepped off the sidewalk. In the streetlight, Billy Ray saw him better. He looked unwell. Deep hollows carved out his cheeks. Gray mauve circles enclosed his eyes. He was bald, ash-skinned, and appeared to be completely bereft of teeth. On his chin, a thin goatee further exacerbated his gauntness. An itinerant magician, Billy Ray hoped he stayed over there. Billy Ray laid back, lighting a cigarette. The man was a moth. God damn it, he thought, realizing what he'd done. The man crossed quickly, scissor-stepping, the coat flapping like broken wings.
"Think I could bum one of them?"
God damn it. Billy Ray handed him a Winston. The man's lighter was clear blue plastic, and the flame shot 3 inches long. Despite his sallow face, the sleeves of his jacket bulged when he flexed his arm, and his hands were gnarly with work.
"You popped up on me like a vampire."
His eyes never stopped moving. They danced across Billy Ray's body down the street to the sky, darting curious, seeing everything all at once.
"I'm glad you're not one. A vampire, I mean."
The man smacked his gums.
"Looks like you were sick."
"I don't have any money."
"Well, that makes two of us."
The man squatted on his heels.
"We might could make some. Bars are about to let out, and people's more generous when they's drunk."
The man pulled his cigarette hard, burning it quick. 5 drags, and it was spent. Billy Ray watched the man out of the corner of his eye. He wished the man would leave him be, but lacked the energy to assert himself. A part of him still expected to be descended upon by the mob from the bar, and if that happened, he would have to take the beating. His tank was empty. He didn't have any more to give. The man scratched at the sidewalk with a rock, the tip of his tongue exposed. Billy Ray couldn't see what he was etching, but he found the noise not unpleasant. The man scraped at the concrete, whistling his song, working with an artist's flourish. When he stopped to consider his work, he nodded.
"That'll do,"
he said, skipping the rock across the street.
"I drew a vampire."
Billy Ray grunted.
"I used to draw caricatures on the boardwalk in Hollywood, Maryland, and one time this guy asked me to draw his wife, and I do, and he pays me, and he says, 'Why don't you come back to our house?' And I do, and then he pays me some more to lay down with his lady, and he says, 'I'm going to draw you two,' and he does, and his was much better than mine. I told him he should have my job, and he says I should have his wife. And I said, well, deal. And every Wednesday I went over there, and he drew us, and it got to be a pretty nice little gig, and they started buying me things, and soon it was like we were a little family. Turned out he was a famous artist, and he had a gallery opening, and made me the guest of honor, and all these rich people bought up them paintings of me boinking his old lady, and they all wanted to meet me, and I shook their hands, and he made a speech, and said I was his inspiration or some shit, and he gave me some of the money. He thanked me for helping him with his art, and I said, all I did was boink your wife. And he said that was what he needed to make art. And I said, shit, if I had to watch somebody fuck my wife to make art, I'd get a new fucking hobby.
The man laughed.
We didn't talk after that.
The man rose from his haunches and smoothed his duster down in the back.
I'll never understand art, but I don't think I want to.
Billy Ray said nothing, not wanting to encourage more.
Can I have another cigarette?
Billy Ray sat up. The man, constantly twitching, stood very close. Everything about him made Billy Ray uneasy. He'd known men like him in prison. Bizarros. The unpredictability makes them dangerous. Billy Ray got to his feet to show his size.
Lordy, you sure got a lot of bones.
The man made a show of observing him from head to toe.
If you're fixing to rough it, you're gonna need a bigger bench.
I wasn't sleeping, said Billy Ray.
Stargazer, huh?
The man craned his head backward.
Ain't much to look at.
You got to know what you're looking for. The man snapped his chin down as if catching a scent on the wind. His demeanor changed, serious now, no longer squirrely. The jerking subsided. He managed to lock his eyes on Billy Ray, squinted.
You say you're looking for something?
Billy Ray thought he detected something in the man's question. It would explain the jitteriness, the breathless sentences. Billy Ray matched the man's stare, extrapolating, running the numbers. It depends. The man picked a cigarette butt off the ground, inspected it, tossed it away.
Well, if you're looking, look no further.
A train approached, the chimes growing louder, bathing them in light. They both watched it pass. Billy Ray swallowed, his mouth watering. Between his feet, the man's vampire sketch looked up at him. He covered its eyes with his heels. The man looked left, then right, put his hand to his mouth and spit. He held out his hand and revealed a palmful of small knots of tied-off plastic. Billy Ray's heart sank. Oh, he said, so close.
It's fire. I whipped it myself.
Contained in the knots were tiny lumps of a dull substance that looked like miniature marshmallows.
Ten a rock, you can try it first.
A car turned on the street, and the man shoved the wet pearls back in his mouth, pushing them down in his lip with his tongue.
If I'm lying, I'm dying.
Billy Ray hesitated, said nothing. The silence was all the man needed to hear.
Come on, Chief. Step into my office.
The man turned, his coat flaring, and Billy Ray followed him back towards the city. The man's gait was even odder up close. His knees never bent, as if his legs were lead pipes. They turned at 29th and then again at the alley. Behind a graffitied garage, the man stepped between two dumpsters, and Billy Ray joined him, the pair invisible from the street. The man's hands worked quick, his thick fingers stuffing a glass tube with a piece of Brillo before nesting on top of it a chunk of grayish wax, the same color as the moon.
Here,
he said, offering the pipe. Blank, Billy Ray put the pipe to his lips, and the man torched the tip in quick intervals. He sucked slow, milking a massive hit, filling his lungs with euphoria. He held it in, exploded, dark smoke. It was immediate. It came on like a concussive rush, like he'd stood up too fast. Feeling it first in his legs, it ran the length of him, an electric wave of rhapsodic pleasure. It shot out his fingers and the world fell away. His blood evaporated. His veins welled with life itself. Oh, he thought. Oh, 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 the deepest sensuality, cosmic understanding. It refused to be defined. And it was beautiful, this unknowable knowledge blasting away all uncertainty, ears ringing, eyes wide. This was heavy fuel, burning clean, burning. The very manna of existence. It felt like getting fucked by God. Seeing in soft focus and breathing crushed velvet perfume. Miracles. We are miracles. We are why the angels sing. Infinity. All of it. All of it. Oh. 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 The stranger watched with a certain kind of pride as the big man hacked and coughed. Good.
I told you.
He said, taking the rest of the pipe load.
Fire!
Completely gone to the moment, Billy Ray knew only one word. More. He pulled his wallet from his pocket and removed 3 tens, unaware of the way the man's eyes stoked when he revealed his bankroll. He gave the man the money and seized his purchases. He didn't mind that they were wet with the stranger's slobber. He used his own teeth to untie the knot. In his frenzy, he didn't notice that the man had given him 4 rocks instead of 3. The scorched glass burnt his fingers, but he didn't feel it. Nothing mattered besides having more. This was why he was alive. The flame on the rock was conception. This is it. Bingo. We have a winner. He sucked and sucked, inflating, deflating, inflating, replacing himself. Oh, oh. Oh, there it is. Here I am. Billy Ray cashed the pipe, untied another bundle. The man picked up a chunk of loose brick, judged the weight in his hand. While the dead moon stared down at the dying planet, Billy Ray packed an entire rock into the end of the tube. He was searching for his lighter when the brick connected with the back of his head, and absolute black shattered all the lights in the world.
Sunday. As the yawning sun crested the city, filling the glass windows with gold, the man nudged an exploratory toe into the body between the dumpsters. You dead? He'd worked through the night, wrapped in his blankets, fending off the cold via locomotion as he hunted treasures. Sunday mornings were the best time for picking. On Sunday mornings, the dumpsters brimmed with bottles and cans, vestiges of the weekend. His shopping cart was loaded with plunder. It had been a fruitful night. Earlier, he'd stripped a washing machine of its precious copper, and later, behind a church, he'd found a trash bag full of old hustlers and fireworks. But that was all just another day at the office. To date, this body on the ground was his most interesting find. The body was breathing. Snoring, actually. Pants pockets turned out, the crotch a darker shade of blue. The body was big. Whatever had put it face down must have been bigger. The picker towed the body again and he stepped back, putting the cart between them. He was afraid that this big body would come to life mean. He didn't want to catch a quarrel. Hello, he said. The body remained prostrate. Creaking on old joints, he knelt down by the body's head and yelled in its ear, Hello! Like an animal coming out of anesthesia, the body jerked awake violently. The picker jumped away and grabbed the handle of his cart, ready to ram the body if it charged. Slowly, the body rolled onto its side, gathering itself, its eyes bleary and searching for some marker to alert it to its whereabouts. The picker leaned into his cart and found one of the sealed water bottles he'd scored. He cracked the top and extended his arm to the body slowly, careful not to spook it. Here. The body sat up to cough and touch its face, and the man thought of it no longer as a body. Billy Ray looked up and saw the picker for the first time, trying to make sense of who he was and what he offered. The man was old, wise-eyed. His skin, the cooked adobe color of a life lived outdoors. His hair, a madman's curly white. He looked like a shepherd, with the man standing over him, a halo of sunlight burning around him. Billy Ray understood he was dead, and this man was here to broker his passage. Take it, the shepherd said. He did as he was told. Where am I? Denver, the stranger said. Okay. Billy Ray opened the water and drank in small sips. He felt like he'd been dropped from a great height. His head was a basket of raw meat stuffed with snakes. Vicious, they snapped at the walls, filling his skull with venom. Opening his eyes hurt, but so did closing them, and his forehead was studded with embedded pebbles from laying as he had. He had no memory of this place. He vaguely remembered running from somewhere. But after, that was a great empty canyon. The holes in his memory were scary, black places. What transgressions lurked in the darkness were best not to think about. What he had done and what had been done to him. Had I deserved it? Probably. Yes. Yes, I had. How long have I been here? He asked the shepherd, shielding his eyes from the excoriating sunlight. The shepherd shook his head. I don't know. I just came upon you. I thought you were dead. Billy Ray twisted and his stomach turned mutinous. He was still drunk and increasingly disoriented. As so often happened, drunk Billy Ray had shanghaied current Billy Ray and abandoned himself in this low place, leaving them with a heavy tab to pay. There was no one to blame, really. Rough trade was the cost of doing business. There was nothing new but the packaging. It could always be worse. He touched the back of his head. The hair was sticky. On his fingers, looked like jam. He looked at his wrist and stared, uncomprehending, at the pale band of skin where his watch used to be. Realizing what was missing, his hand shot to his pockets, but they hung out of his pants like dog ears. Worse indeed, he looked up at the shepherd, and the old man gave him a solemn nod. "You've been picked clean," the shepherd said. "You done pissed yourself, too." Billy Ray touched his crotch. "Fuck." "Yup." Billy Ray watched a pair of magpies alight on a gutter. He coughed, spat brown. "You got any cigarettes? I got me a pouch." Billy Ray struggled to his feet, joints popping, and rolled a cigarette from the shepherd's tobacco and stood huffing rough smoke as the old man picked over the bins. The sun, nascent no longer, burned with a punitive intensity that Billy Ray couldn't help but take personally. He moved into the shade of the garage and stripped to the waist and drank water and smoked, watching the trash picker assemble a very small fortune of glass and aluminum. Knowing the amount of money stolen from his wallet collapsed his lungs, but he received a non-zero amount of comfort in knowing that he and the mystery bandit were two sides of the same opportunistic coin. He'd made evil moves against the weak and unsuspecting. The perpetration of such acts had defined him for a long time, and while he would never call it karma, he refused to believe that the universe was organized in any way, nor did he believe a super cosmic matrix connected him to anyone else. He understood Newton's laws, actions, reactions. The momentum created by his past iniquities had simply boomeranged on him, and today it was his turn to wake up with nothing. He'd been playing with the markers for years, and last night the house had finally come to collect what was theirs. The mystery bandit and Billy Ray were links in a chain as old as the concept of property, and he had harbored no resentment towards his mugger. The only person to blame was himself. It was he who left himself open to be victimized. In the scenario he envisioned, he assumed he'd come to the alley to relieve himself, and some enterprising assailant had snuck up with a blunt object and scored a jackpot while his dick was in his hands. It was he who decided to be his own bank. No one should carry that much cash. He knew that. It was foolish and gauche. The result of his impoverished upbringing. There was nothing he loved more than the bulge of folded money. The impotence he felt as poor youth dangling without a safety net had twisted his perception of the importance of physical currency, an idea further warped by the dignity-stripping effect of prison's mutant economy. Having $1,000 on him ensured his autonomy. A man with money is just that, a man. And as long as he's got the cash, he is forever free. Now a healthy portion of his net worth and the legacy of his labor for the past month, along with his driver's license and his credit card, were in the position of someone stronger than he. And while thinking about the actual money gave him the spins inside of his wounded mind, on the scales he used to measure legitimacy and justice, he viewed the crime itself a small price of the natural order of things. The powerful plunder and the weak are ransacked. Such it is written, and so it goes. Well, looky here, Billy Ray surfaced from deep within himself to see the shepherd emerge from the dumpster, hopping out of the metal box with a practiced efficiency that contradicted his age. Are these yours? He dangled a set of keys on a steel braid. Fuck my big old ass. Smiling, the shepherd tossed the man his keys. You never know what you'll find until you start looking for it. The trash picker set to work smashing the cans he's found, and Billy Ray joined them. They worked wordlessly, the old man setting the cans up tight and Billy Ray dropping his boot and the old man loading the aluminum discs in a trash bag. When the cans were done, Billy Ray held open the trash bag and the old man filled it with bottles. Billy Ray loaded the bags in the cart and rolled one last cigarette while the old man secured his bounty with bungee cords. Billy Ray held out the bugler, but the old man waved it off. You could take it. Billy Ray started to refuse, but stopped himself. You sure? The old man nodded. I can buy more. He didn't know what to say. Moved by this morning's succession of unnecessary kindness, Billy Ray felt a pressure from within to say something poignant. If this was a movie, this was the time for his character to communicate his gratitude. When his grand statement was over, punctuated by a lingering hand hug, the old man would turn to leave, but not before imparting him with a few arcane final words that Billy Ray would ponder as the old man disappeared in an orchestrated lens flare. But Billy Ray wasn't a movie star anymore. He was a penniless and shirtless and piss-soaked destitute, incapable of poetry, with gravel in his hair. In lieu of anything meaningful, Billy Ray said thanks, and the old drifter said yep, and recompensed his task. Leaning into his cart to return to his lonely circuit, as he watched his shepherd grow smaller down the alley in his addled, semi-conscious mind state, Billy Ray half expected wings to emerge from the old man's back and for his shepherd to ascend in a beam of austere light and for he himself to wake up and be rescued from this nightmare. Instead, he started his trudge. He stuck to the alleyways. All around him, the new day formed. Squirrels chattered in the branches of trees, bird sounds, mice busy in the leaves. A dog in a backyard followed him along the chain link, its bark choked by its leash. Fuck off, mutt, he said. He found a hose and drank from it. The dog ran back and forth. His belly swayed as he walked, flopping in front of him like an unfilled bladder. The sunlight felt pleasant on his chest, but in his jeans, his thighs chafed, brined in urine and rashing. Chemical liquid bled out his pores. The stink was sharp and inorganic. He tied his shirt around his head in a turban. Death to America, he said, still drunk. He sat down on a concrete embankment and removed his boots. The feet in his moist socks were pink, almost purple, and swollen. He was surprised when they didn't stink. He crossed his leg and rubbed his toes until the color lessened and he returned them to his socks and pulled on his boots. He slapped his thighs and stood up. All right, he said. At the light on Park Avenue, he crossed the diagonal and continued his parade south, snaking past the herds of Welsh-crest churchgoers, Judas among the Philistines. In a churchyard, children stopped what they were doing to stare at him. He waved. The children turned away. While the clock tower on Arapo rang nine times, he crafted a cigarette at the bus stop on 20th, sharing his tobacco around the destination list and putting on his shirt. Assuming he was one of them, they offered tips on fresh beds in exchange for his papers, and none of them asked him for anything more. I can't eat no more of that soup here. The chicken and rice isn't that bad. A man needs more than soup. They have bologna. Bitch, I got your bologna right here. He stood with them and smoked and listened to their nonsense, enjoying the anonymity, the small stakes of their lives. His raw dog headache had dulled to a persistent pulsation centered in the roots of his eyes. His teeth felt loose in his gums, and his stomach alternated between a burning cauldron and a heavy, laden thing. The hardened part was not answering the quivering in his hands. His addiction didn't understand commerce. Motherfucker, he thought, the treachery. He thought he spied a bottle circling among the transients, but it never made it his way. He was about to ask if anyone had a sip to spare when a transit cop came and the group dispersed. His hands continued to shake. He walked stout slowly, trying to keep his thighs from rubbing. His hands reached under his shirt periodically to wipe the sweat from beneath his breast. On top of his head, his scalp burned in one of the spots where his hair was sparse. A line of young people quayed at a breakfast restaurant, their phone screens reflected in their sunglasses. A group of patrons rose from their table on the patio, and off their plates he stole a half-eaten sandwich and a handful of home fries and downed the remains of two champagne flutes. He opened the leather bill book but found no cash. He ate the sandwich in three bites. A train passed. His face in the window looked displeased. Further ahead, he saw what he assumed to be a street fair. It wasn't until 18th that the zombies appeared. They were legion. Their numbers clotted the streets. It was worse than he could ever imagine. The dead, alive, risen. The locks of their sepulchres broken. Empty hell, apocalypse by the thousands. 17th was blocked off to accommodate the rotting herd. They lurched, mechanically, petrified, somnambulistic, gnashing and groaning, full-throated when they bumped into each other. Some wore jerseys and some wore rags, and some were stylish and some were nude. Color-coordinated in matching outfits, groups of monsters moved together in formation, while others, who had clearly been families before the outbreak, stayed close to one another. Mother and father zombies pulling their undead children on leashes, zombies holding hands, others stopping to kiss or snap selfies. His brain scrambled to make sense of the disparate inputs. The ghouls outnumbered the living, but of the unturned, only he seemed to be alarmed. It was like a block party. Hawkers peddled bottled water and T-shirts, and music blared from a bandstand, and hot dog carts did busy business. Unharassed by the shuffling horde and serving up francs to the zombies who waited patiently to pay, the dissonance was incomputable. "I'm asleep," he thought, "or that shepherd was a liar and I've joined the ranks of hell." He turned to a man standing on a park bench filming a macabre display with his cell phone. Billy Ray had to yell to be heard, "What is this shit?" The man turned to answer him. Half of his face was cherry red scab. "Zombie crawl, dude." The man pointed and Billy Ray followed his finger. A banner above Stout Street read, "Fifth Annual Denver Zombie Crawl. Brains." The man hissed. Billy Ray moved away from him, shaking his head. Zombie crawl. He had never heard of such a thing, but it made sense. As a species, humankind was bored, and ever increasingly bullshit passed for fun. Their mirth disgusted him. Their happiness was ostracizing, numb to inorganic novelty. He pitied their false calamity. Their lives, staid, monotonous, were so safe and predictable. These people were forced to organize chaos and pretend they were dead. It was so disappointing. For a moment, he thought he'd made it to Armageddon. He'd always maintained a fantasy that he would live long enough to see the end of days. It seemed like the best way to go, bearing witness to the last breaths of mankind, licked to death by the same flames that consumed existence, the quiet afterwards. In his mind, it was beautiful. The last humans, unalone in death, dying shoulder to shoulder, as close as the species will ever be, bound by extinction, a part of the ultimate something, Ragnarok, the end. In their final moments, they will know true bravery, and they will die united and noble. No caskets, no survivors trapped in mourning. Their ashes, the soil from which the next nature grows. He envied them to be swallowed by annihilation, the purest form of death. It was the most he could hope for. At the very least, Holocaust is original. This fraudulent hell was only more purgatory. "What will they think of next?" he asked, but no one was listening. He considered going around, decided, "What the hell? I'll show them a monster." He stepped off the sidewalk and entered the fray. Portions of faces, shoulder blades, hands, feet on feet, knees colliding, shins hammering shins, crevice odors, fingers, mouths, and teeth and tongues. They moaned, they cackled. Billy Ray hated them all, these pieces of this larger thing. Despite an initial push that left him turned around and unsure of his direction, he found a rhythm and matched the flow. After a few panicked moments, he located the clock tower and adapted to the swirl of the crush. The trick was never to stop moving forward. He surged through gaps in the mass, darting like a running back, picking his holes and anticipating their movements. Having already walked a dehydrated mile this morning, he felt every step in the large muscles of his legs and the arches of his feet. His height was an asset, allowing him to see above the heads and find the breaks in the unrelenting wave. Patterns became evident. The crowd seemed to enclose and expand simultaneously. Gelatinous contractions. The throng moved like a jellyfish. He bobbed. He weaved. Inside the bedlam, his headache became a crown of nails. His eyes burned. Still, they came. By 17th Street, he exhausted the reserves of his consideration. He became violent. His pace increased. He fought. He muscled. He clawed. When they reached for him, he slapped away their hands. He stomped on their toes. If the procession ceased momentarily, he lowered his shoulder and shoved the back of the person in front of him until progress was restored. His eyes silenced any protest. "I am the monster," they said. "You're pretending to be me." The intimate quarters afforded him an anonymity that was rare to a man of his size. It was thrilling to be so close to so many without being noticed. He could do anything in here. It reminded him of the orgies in the valley, the ones with masks and tarps, a bucket of Crisco by the door. The closeness surfaced a licentious debauchery from the darkest depths of his id, and he succumbed to the whisper of his lowest craven impulse. Ever the explorer, Billy Ray tested the floor of his bottom. At first, he experimented with the back of his forearm, brushing it quickly against the breasts of passing women, his wrists, his fingers like feathers. When none of them challenged his touch, emboldened, he switched to his hands, disguising his clandestine assaults as accidental contact forced by the crowd's constant compressions. He palmed, he groped, he initiated gratuitous friction, rising. Oh boy, he thought, they were all here, 72 virgins, a terrorist in heaven. The ease of the debasement possessed him. The monster became the beast. He squeezed a woman's buttock, smelling the rose oil in her hair. A hand caught his wrist and the woman spun around. Seeing the behemoth, the dead eyes in its skull, the joy melted from her face. "Oh," she said. She shoved him, her hand strong against his chest. "Sicko," she shrieked. "Dirty fucking bastard." She slapped him, clawed for his eyes, fingernails against his neck, drawing blood. But her attack went unnoticed in the sea of moaning. Despite the volume, her outrage melded with the overall din, her remonstration presenting as more counterfeit madness. Billy Way wriggled backwards, bodies filed between them, and they were separated. He escaped into a crease in the mob and followed the slipstream until it shot him out on 16th Street. He leans against a Starbucks window, sucking air. Outside the swarm, his humanity returned, and the former rutting brute was confronted by his own stench. The stink of old urine was overpowering. That's me, he thought. That's the smell of me. Feeling the rigidity between his thighs, shame, both sudden and complete, set around him like a personal midnight. If I'm not dead, he thought, I should be. My God. He turned to the window and touched the cool glass. He imagined driving his face through the pane and cutting his neck on the shards. A shuttle bus stopped at the intersection he considered laying down in front of its wheels. Nearby, a group of police stood in a half circle observing the revelers. I could go for one of their guns. That would do it. He found comfort in the thought of dying, but the momentary solace was canceled when he remembered he was a coward and there was nothing to be done. The event thinned out the further he got from Stout. Placidity replaced fervor. It was Sunday, after all. Pastel-clad women sipped wine on patios. Buskers warbled over untuned guitars outside the Cheesecake Factory. Families of tourists stared at their phones, a new breed of zombie. Granted invisibility by his filthiness, nobody saw Billy Ray. From a block away, Billy Ray spotted a yellow envelope tucked under his wiper blade. Unwilling to subject himself to yet another insult, he tore the ticket in half without opening it and let the pieces be carried away by the wind. He opened the trunk and found his cachet and counted what remained of his money, less than he needed, more than he was worth. It was all he had in this world. He took off his boots and his pants and overshirt and stuffed them in the trunk and climbed into the driver's seat and peeled off his underwear and dropped them out the window. Completely nude, he attempted a cigarette, but his hands failed him and the tobacco spilled over his naked stomach. He slammed his fist onto the roof of the car. That was something his hands could still do. He pressed his forehead into the steering wheel and made a list of all the things he needed to accomplish. He needed cold liquor, and he needed cold water, and he needed hot food, and he needed soap, and he needed to get clean, and he needed to get off the road, and he needed red because he needed the cruise ships, because he needed more money, because he was getting too old, and he needed to forgive comedy. He was not a martyr, and he needed to be grateful because he'd had a good ride. He needed to forget about what he had been and come to terms with what he was. And he needed to be a father and a grandfather, and he needed to apologize to everyone that ever loved him, and needed to remember that once he had been loved, and he needed to see Olivia's face, to smell her perfume, to hear her laugh, because he needed to reconnect to a time before the reign of depression, before he succumbed to the ugly in the dark, and he needed to remember once that he had been a good man, that he was once whole, and he needed to remind himself life was precious because above all else, as it stood right now, he needed to convince himself that he didn't want to die. There were a pair of sweatpants in the back seat, and he found them and put them on. He slipped on a crew neck and his boots, sans socks, and taking a deep breath, Billy Ray emerged from the car and walked the two blocks to the liquor store. Swollen with nausea and a mounting free-range anxiety that drove his heart against the bars of its cage, he caught his reflection in the window of a cafe. He looked like a ward of the state, like a mental patient or one of the sad, broken men in prison who couldn't be trusted with a belt or shoelaces. The outfit made sense. It reflected how he felt. He arrived at Champa Street Liquors, a prophet at the gates of Mecca. His fingers calmed as they met the doorknob. He pulled the brass. The door refused. You gotta twist it, stupid. He tried again, yanking with all of him, but the door remained shut. He cupped his hands on the glass and peered inside. The store was empty. Despite the obvious vacancy, he banged on the door. Hello? He stepped back, checking around the side for an alternate entrance. A sign on the door offered the hours of operation. Reading it, his despondency redlined. No, he said. Come on. It was Sunday. When he was a child, the centennial state prohibited the sale of liquor on the Sabbath, but for the law to still stand in this age of gay marriage and pot shop seemed impossible. He tried the knob one last time, shaking the door on its hinges. Fuck me running, he said. He spat on the door. His saliva looked like paste. He didn't have enough money to drink in a bar. He knew what he needed, and he knew what he had, and one was less than the other. There was rent and renter's insurance and the car note and Jeremiah's tuition. He couldn't float any of it. Last, he talked to the creditors, and they said he had to start paying a portion of his credit cards down or else they were going to take him to court. After last night, he had about $80 to spare, and that wasn't enough for bar prices. Even riding the rail, his war chest would run empty before he remedied himself. This was real pain. His nerves were hot wires. His bones were made of glass. His eyes felt like they were constricting, as if they might burst. And in the space behind them where his brain used to be, A Detroit of rusted machinery begged for lubrication as it showered his interior skull with sparks. This wasn't a hair of the dog simulation. He needed every bit of the dog, the lungs, the heart, the teeth. Total obliteration. He needed to drink until he disappeared, until he abdicated the title of Billy Ray Schaefer and devolved into something without a name or a past. He assessed the entrance. Even if he smashed the glass, the door was mounted with a second steel security door. He'd need tools to remove it. The windows weren't barred, but they were high and narrow, and Billy Ray was low and fat. Larceny wasn't an option. His knuckles were white. God damn it all. Focus, he thought. What was needed right now was a doable whiskey stopgag and to sit and think until his reality ceased pulsing. He scanned his surroundings. Across the street, two bars with ampersands in their names shouldered each other for attention. On one patio, mimosa seekers emptied carafes. On the other, young people poised in self-conscious smiles while their waiters captured their memories on smartphones. These places were not for him. He felt too dead to be around so much life. A block in front of a steakhouse, a sandwich board advertised $5 vodka and oyster shooters. Reading it, he gagged. The office building lining Champa offered no succor. He spun around and searched the storefronts, Indian restaurant, improv theater, cupcake shop, hot dogs, his eyes finding nothing, his anxiety swelling to a symphony of asymmetrical noise. Then he saw it. The familiar red awning, the cursive letters stained dirty off-white. Of course, he thought, there's my foxhole. With grim purpose, he walked to Walgreens. The store, like all chain pharmacies, was sterile and white, a retail designer's version of hospital chic. Soft jazz and softer light. The conditioned air, his full cold, seared his sweat-soaked shirt to his back like a second skin. His fellow shoppers shifted listlessly, dragging behind their shopping carts, blanks, lifeless, as if they, too, were diagnosed and installed in this location. A group of Latino children in backwards hats rummaged through bins of candy beneath a sign for diabetic testing supplies. A stooped woman, gray and muttering, studied a coupon insert with the magnifying glass as if it were a map of her destiny. In the supplements aisle, two men compared the prices on bottles of vitamins, one of them legless in an electric wheelchair, the other tethered via tubing to a rolling tank of oxygen, while zombies from the parade filled tote bags with Gatorade and salami and sunscreen. Billy Ray saw all of this, standing in the middle of it, a hybrid, near dead but not yet, a filthy, wet, last-chance man, burping his shirt and searching the store directory for the oral hygiene aisle. The Listerine was less than a penny per millimeter, and it came in two flavors, mint or ultra clean. He settled on ultra clean. The blue hue looked more refreshing. The clerk was a large woman with heavy braids and long fingernails painted the color of honeydew melon. She looked from him to the mouthwash, puckered her lips to the side of her face and scanned the bottle, her eyes askance and knowing. Is that it? What are your cheapest cigarettes? His voice sounded like snapping twigs. When she turned around to face the cigarettes, the clerk's hair swung like a coil of shining black pendulums. Pall Malls is buy one, get one. Okay, the Reds. He slipped a candy bar in his pocket as she bent for the lowest shelf. He laid a 20 on the counter and she held up the bill to examine it by the light, making a show of verifying the bill's legitimacy before adding it to her drawer. Carefully, begrudgingly, she picked out his change with her talons and handed him the remainder. Billy Ray collected his sundries and thanked her. The woman shouted, "Next!" He stepped outside and opened the cigarettes and asked a tie-dyed stranger for a light. He lifted up his pullover and leaned against the building, pressing his back into the cold gray marble as he smoked, watching the light rail fill up with the undead. The sun was at full peak, beating the city and filling the sidewalks with fire. He regretted not buying water. He missed the air conditioning back in the store. If only he had a hotel room. He could go there, turn the thermostat to its lowest setting, and freeze as he drank himself to death. When the train stop was empty, he cracked a mouthwash. If he pinched his nose, it wasn't that bad. With a bit of imagination, it tasted like peppermint schnapps or the liqueur bartender's toast within Chicago. The mouthwash was at room temperature, and it stung his throat going down. The blue liquid scoured the walls of his empty organ, acid on acid. The reaction felt like he was splitting in half. He drank some more. After a few pulls off the bottle and another cigarette, his head quit screaming and the quiver went out of his hands. He recapped the bottle and went back inside to buy a jug of water and a handful of Slim Jims, taking his time, enjoying the cool air, letting the steam rise. In the foyer, he removed his sweatshirt and walked to the car with the sun on his back. He smelled awful, a gamey metallic roadkill stink. If he was going to see Olivia, and he was, it was his only purpose. He needed to be clean. He dug through the trunk and found a plastic bag full of old hotel soaps and a clean T-shirt and his pair of Levi's and packed them in with his sustenance. Then, in the car, he removed his boots and his sweatpants and slipped on a pair of boxers before re-donning the sweats. Shoeless and gumming on a Slim Jim, Ray walked up 14th to Larimer and down the stairs to find himself alone with the Cherry Creek. The creek was fat and clear with the last of the summer melt, but it still ran slow enough for Billy Ray to stand still in the current without fighting. The water barely reached his thighs. He walked down until he was far from the path and stripped his boxers and knelt in the silt, letting the water cover him to his neck. The creek was cold and sharp and rich with the rusted metal smell of wild water. He dipped his chin and let the water fill his mouth. It tasted like pennies. He stood up and lathered himself with soap and dipped back down and repeated this process until he was raw and clean. Then he worked the bar through his hair, careful about the tender spot where the brick connected, and scrubbed his face and submerged totally, disappearing behind the rippling silver, becoming a secret from the world. Under the water, he couldn't help but smile. This was a level of freedom very few men achieved, pure communion. He welled with a sense of renewal. Even in the throes of a brutal hangover and on a pauper's budget, he'd figured out how to heal himself and get clean for less than $5. There was always more money. Cash was liquid, inconstant. It came and went like rain. He knew how to live while he was waiting for more. At least he still had his wits. He spit a fountain of water. He splashed. He peed. He forgot about his calamitous night and his empty pockets and his weeks of work pilfered. He didn't have much at this time, but he owned the present. Later tonight, he would attest for his past and improve his future. It wasn't about winning her back. He wasn't delusional. It was about vocalizing his understanding of his misdeeds and failures, about taking responsibility for his long-term interpersonal vandalism and apologizing, hopefully, offering closure on what he knew to be her deepest of wounds. If it was too early for olive branches, maybe they could at least plant a tree. He didn't know what he was going to say. He'd figure it out on the drive up. He worked better against a deadline, and the words were of small consequence. It was the doing of the thing that mattered. It felt good to have a plan. High on this conviction in the water and the sunlight, he decided it was proper to get fully nude. He looked both ways, up and down the bike trail and hugged the creek's edge. When he deemed it clear, he crouched down in the water and liberated himself. A nuthatch honked. Billy Ray shut his eyes and enjoyed the buoyancy, relishing the weightlessness and the relief to his unburdened joints. It was narcotic, akin to beer and somas. He grabbed a handful of love handle and squeezed. It wasn't always this way. Once his body had been a collection of stones hewn together with straps of leather. He was a solid 220 going into senior year football, lean and strong. Once, when Anthony Sandrin, misjudging the hairpins and washboards on Missile Base Road, spilled off his Harley, Billy Ray pulled the chopper off his pin friend with one arm. Prison had further fortified his conditioning. At the end of the sentence, he emerged from lockup a slab of concrete, as sturdy and hard as petrified wood. What he'd give for that body, that youth, pulling at his gut. He decided tomorrow he would start a diet. It would be nothing for him to drop 30 pounds if he hit the weights. Back when he was in demand as an actor, he learned how to drop mass quick. Egg whites and green beans, vodka instead of beer. Easy as that. Get into shape. Meet someone normal in L.A. Live a life less lonely. Tomorrow, what a beautiful word. As the clouds bound the sun like poached whites around egg yolk, Billy Ray laid back against a boulder and made a mental note to go swimming more often. A ka-thunk, a splash. He opened his eyes and looked for the fish, but another ka-thunk behind him and a clutch of young laughter made him understand he was under attack. Standing up, exposed completely, he looked above to Spear Boulevard. Holy shit, he's fucking bare-ass. Above him on Larimer, leaning against the guardrail, a group of teenagers whooped and pointed from their vantage point on the pedestrian bridge. None of them appeared old enough to buy cigarettes, but a few of them were smoking. They were dressed for outdoor exertion, basketball shorts, grownish oversized T-shirts, thick sneakers with puffy wide tongues, sportswear that clashed with their punked haircuts and stick-and-poke tattoos, the lot of them either standing on skateboards or holding their decks by their nose. No way! Look! I can't see it! Billy Ray forgot about the lack of trunks and stopped towards the youths, high-kneeling through the water, his scrotum flopping between his thighs. You think that's funny, you little shits? Whoa! Holy shit! I told you, fucking bare-ass. The boys clucked. A few of them slapped their boards against the rail. Hey, mister, called down a kid with a bushy red afro. Where's your dick? Billy Ray looked down to see a less than flattering length of himself exposed. Covering up with his bare hands, he considered deferring to the water temperature, but he decided to greet hostility with hostility. I left it in your mother's cunt, faggot. The youth recoiled, obviously surprised at the quickness of the naked man's retort. Her bush looked like your hairdo and her pussy looked like your face. A tremor of tremendous laughter seized the group of skateboarders as they fell over each other's laughing. Only the redhead refrained. Any further rebuttal silenced by his peers' decisive glee. Instead, he scowled and shrank. This guy rules, one of them said, a black kid with a hoop in his nose. Maybe he'll buy us some beer. It's Sunday, retard. We can still get 3-2. Fuck 3-2. Fuck you, Colby. Hey, man, will you buy us some beer? Go fuck yourself, said Billy Ray. We're not cops. We're just trying to party. Go fuck yourself, he repeated. Damn. Billy Ray turned and walked back to the shore and wrapped himself in a pullover. If you want to get drunk, he offered, go buy some Listerine. Mouthwash is for hobos, man. Suit yourself. Billy Ray bent over, brought out his bottle and drank. The skateboarders reacted with a collective awe bordering on admiration. Gnarly. Savage. I told you, this guy rules.
Sam Talent, Running the Light, Sunday night, Jackie Cation. The stiff Levi's cut into his stomach, but the dark denim complemented the powder blue snap shirt tucked into their waist. The belt was unnecessary, but he fancied the buckle and the way the stripe of rich red leather divided his body. He slipped on socks and, after administering a quick spit shine with an old t-shirt, he pulled his boots on over them and neatly cuffed his jeans. I'm getting shaggy, he thought, amassing the length of his hair into a ducktail at the base of his neck. He was overdue for a razor, and the middle of his face was healing around his broken nose in a graying purple. But, assessing himself in the darkened glass of a high-rise window, he thought he looked like he gave a shit, and he hoped Olivia would agree. He took off the shirt and put it on a hanger and hung it from the grip handle in the back seat so as not to wrinkle or sweat it through on the drive. He smoked a cigarette, holding the butt away from him and blowing the smoke off his body. Olivia hated the smell. When they first met, she smoked Virginia Slim Super Slims, as long and narrow as the stick of a Tootsie Pop. She smoked on weekends, and she smoked when she drank, but her habit was a weak imitation of Billy Ray's two-pack-per-day obsession. When she quit, it was easy for her, and made easier by her nurse's rounds and her daily glimpse into the long-term effects of carcinogens. She begged Billy Ray to stop, and he tried while he was home with her, having weeks of success, especially when she used her body as incentive. But as soon as he was back on the road and dependent on willpower to govern his various intakes, the spell broke, and Thursday morning came, and he woke up with a carton in his hotel mini-fridge. Eventually, he quit quitting, because he didn't like feeling weak, and Olivia, succumbing to another non-consensual compromise, quit asking him to quit because she didn't like feeling stupid. Instead, she changed her attack and enforced the rules she could. At her request, before he got into bed beside her, he scrubbed his hands and face with lava soap, or else she wouldn't let him near her. The pumice was like washing with sandpaper, but it was the only soap that did the job and was worth it to smell the back of her head, to kiss her on the base of her neck where her necklace is closed. And he washed like this every night until one night, after an argument, he refused as a sign of protest, and the habit was broken, joining his ever-growing list of petty defiances. Olivia had few needs, and she asked for very little, and Billy Ray denied her out of habit, viewing compliance with her simple demands as a signal of surrender and submission to what he saw as a pervasive crusade to domesticate him completely, to wring out all of his wild. He'd live in the barn, and he'd fight with the rope, but he wasn't ready to be fit for a saddle. To give in to her was to lose another inch of himself, and between the travel and the radio and the shows and the crowds, Billy Ray didn't think there was much more of him left to give. He fought for what remained with a blindfolded fury that rendered his wife his enemy. You fucking idiot. If he had a time machine, he wouldn't go back in time and kill Hitler. He'd return to that night he didn't wash his hands and scrub them until he bled. He got in the car and turned it on, and joined Arapaho, and fought over right to turn onto Spear, and followed it across the river and out of the city until he was northbound on I-25. He drove with the radio on classic rock, happy to hear something familiar. Less and less he understood the things people said, and that confusion carried over into modern music. The bottom end was too thin, and the lyrics, abstruse, tried too hard to add profound. He liked songs that said what they meant, songs about fast women and weak men and the results of their coupling. He slapped the steering wheel along with Keith Moon as Roger Daltrey promised he wouldn't get fooled again. And when Billy Gibbons posited that women loved a sharp-dressed man, Billy Ray agreed by opening up the throttle to beat emerging Big Rig. Within two song lengths, Denver was gone, replaced briefly by suburbs until the retaining walls of Thornton and North Glen ended and the Enterprise Zone began, a leftover expanse filled with the black-topped acreages of office park parking lots and faceless bland rectangles of post-industrial architecture, unapologetically brutal in their adherence to form following function. It looked like New Jersey. He drove past car dealerships and grocery wholesalers and depots pertaining to both office and home, past fast food drive-thrus and fast casual dine-ins, and the patriotic big box stores flying massive American flags selling goods straight from China, past a movie theater with 25 screens and a putt-putt course with laser tag and a sporting goods store with an indoor lake. Finally, he drove past more than a mile of furniture outlets, and the land thereafter became unfenced, barren pastures of brittle, golden grass. In his opinion, all the Colorado north of Boulder was southern Wyoming. The land up here was barely fit for grazing cattle. Unzoned and unwanted, the Bureau of Land Management oversaw the majority of the I-25 corridor between Longmont and Fort Collins. Besides the sporadic truck stops and telephone poles, the land was unadorned and empty. For stretches of tens of miles, the world outside of his window was bereft of the hallmarks of civilization, surrounding him with twin seas of monotonous yellow, the most exciting feature of which was the wind. Unimpeded by buildings or mountains for miles east and west, the wind blew faster in the north, startling the alfalfa fields frenzied as if they were haunted or on wires and lashing the car in harsh gales that pushed Billy Ray across the white line. Fighting the wind consumed his focus until he passed a sign that read, "High winds possible." "No shit," he muttered, making a mental note to add it to his chunk about falling rocks. Craving a cigarette and food beyond Slim Jim's, Billy Ray pulled off at a truck stop 28 miles from Fort Collins. At the entrance to the parking lot, he missed his turn and found himself in the lot reserved for long haulers. He felt small, weaving his car through the jungle of resting chrome hulks, miniaturized by their enormity. A woman in a glaring red miniskirt walked among the trucks. She knocked on the door of a wine-colored rig, and the trucker inside the cabin rolled down his window and said something Billy Ray couldn't hear, and the woman frowned and skulked along. He crawled out of the car at the pump and massaged both of his fists into his lower back as he arched backwards to stretch. The sky above, unhampered by smog, burned brighter than it did in the city, a vivid blue like the color of the mouthwash he'd been sipping. He had to squint against its intensity. The gas station was expansive inside, stocked with the menagerie of goods that spoke to the odd needs of those that lived on the road. There were racks